Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Wednesday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Darvin Ham said at practice on Tuesday that he's not interested in changing starting lineups, but that might be taken care of for him. We'll explain next on Locked On Lakers.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts. Always free, never behind a paywall. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to see the show, generally get it a little bit earlier than the straight audio product. We like to post that early for people. Great community to participate in. You leave comments on there. We often incorporate them into the show, so it's a great way to participate in the program itself. So thank you to everybody for all your support of the Locked On Lakers YouTube channel, which continues to grow rapidly. I want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more props and odds and lines and all of that stuff than ever before. Bet Online, where the game starts. Andy, in classic Mike D'Antoni fashion back in the day, I like to make the joke sometimes when the Lakers get off to these rough starts that the season begins, you know, the next game. So the Lakers, sure, in my mind, have played now their 85th game of last season, but they're going to start a truncated 79-game season today in Denver. And this actually might be an opportunity for a really clean start, because that exciting sound you heard, that sound of glee and cheer and happiness coming out of L.A., Russell Westbrook listed as doubtful for Wednesday's game in Denver. And Lakers fans,
that's the sound. That's the sound you heard.
Lakers fans who are just out of patience, and generally speaking, shouldn't root for the injury of another human being. We're nonetheless uniformly pleased at the news that Westbrook is doubtful for tonight's game, unlikely to play. Andy, this was interesting because it came mere hours after Darvin Ham at practice said he wasn't interested today in changing lineups.
Hours, Brian. It came minutes after Darvin Ham had said this.
After Darvin Ham said
that. Yeah, it was interesting. Darvin Ham was asked about the starting lineup and whether he planned to keep it, any plan to change it or whatever. And he just said, not today. You know, the obvious kind of joke being, well, we're not playing today anyway, so right. What difference does it make? And then I think within 30 minutes max after that, I believe I first saw from Dave McMenamin from ESPN saying that Russ was doubtful for this game in Denver, that same hamstring that came up in the preseason finale that Russ only played 5 minutes. The most controversial hamstring injury in the history of hamstrings and injuries. A lot of people doubting the veracity of that hamstring injury, wondering if this was Russ creating some type of protest through taking himself off the court, yada, yada, yada.
Oh, my arm.
Right, exactly. But Russell Westbrook, he is, for what it is worth, because, and we're going to get into this, I'm sure, that this has raised the question of Russ's future with the team, because there have already been questions about whether or not the Lakers would be better off sending him home until they can eventually find a trade for him, or letting his salary come off the books, whichever comes first. He is actually traveling with the team to Denver, presumably traveling with them to Minnesota for Friday's game, unless something happens in between. So that is, if nothing else, an indication that we are not quite phasing towards that, if nothing else, yet, because there is no reason you would have him travel with the team if you are planning to exile him.
There are a couple things. Like, a cynic might say that this is the Lakers kind of tapping Russ on the shoulder and saying, I think your hamstring hurts, Russ. Why don't we just take a break here for a second, but you can heal your hamstring. Similar to how when teams used to have an injured list. Remember that, Andy? They had an injured list, and guys would develop lower back stiffness at very convenient parts of a day or a season.
Back spasms were a big one too.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was a good one. There, I kind of hope that he really is like hurt here, because I will say he's been awful on offense. It's amazing. Like, Westbrook has been better defensively this year than offensively, and it's not even close. And it's not like he's been, you know, peak MJ on defense either. So the offense is problematic, and it would actually be somewhat comforting if you were hoping to get any kind of productivity out of the guy to find that the hamstring has really been bothering him, and that might be one of the reasons that he is missing so much of the rim, that he can't, you know, he's not a good three-point shooter. Is he an 8% three-point shooter? No, probably a little better than that. You know, so an actual injury here could be a good sign, something that can heal, and maybe he comes back and plays better. But the bigger question I have, Andy, is this. What do they do? Like, is this a potential bit of a reset where, you know, you go into the third game, Russ doesn't play, maybe he doesn't play, you know, on Friday, give him the 2 days of the road trip to really heal up. And let's say the Lakers play better in both of them. Like, what is this absence from Westbrook? What opportunities might it present for the team?
Well, I mean, to be honest, and I mean, this was on the agenda for you and I for today's show before this news broke about Westbrook. But one of the things that I plan to bring up before it was his actual playing was in jeopardy, but it feels like this moving Russell Westbrook at minimum to the bench is something that needs to happen, because he is not fitting with the starters at all. And in particular with LeBron, because there's just too much redundancy and too little use for Russ if he's playing off ball. So if you're actually looking to find the best version of Russell Westbrook, and I guess by extension, the best version of the Lakers, I think moving him to the bench makes a lot of sense. But I also thought that moving him to the bench on the road actually made a lot of sense too, because this would be a game with, relatively speaking, I mean, nothing with the Lakers ever happens quietly, but relatively speaking, you have fewer media members that we'd be paying as close attention to this. Then you have another game in Minnesota where Russ comes off the bench. And then by the time he comes back to LA for another game against Denver at the Crypto, like, it's less of a story and there's less to ask him about. And frankly, I actually think the reception to Russ coming off the bench the first time could even be more hostile at home than on the road.
Yeah.
So in a lot of ways, I actually thought, again, before this hamstring thing came up, I actually thought that this was a very opportune time to rip the Band-Aid that clearly needs to come off.
You know, there's an aspect of this that I think is becoming as important as Westbrook's play itself. And you're kind of getting to it when you talk about the reception, when you talk about the where, when you talk about the how. And so I want to get to that next.
Let's talk a little bit about LinkedIn, Brian. These days,
yes. People need jobs.
Yes, they do. People need jobs. And you know what? People need employees. And these days, every new potential hire can feel like a high-stakes wager for your small business. You want to be 100% sure that you have access to the best qualified candidates available. And that's why you need to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the right people for your team faster and for free. It's easy to lay out all the information about your business, the work environment that you want to foster, the culture, the type of projects that you do. And then from there, add your job that you're looking to fill and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you're hiring. And simple tools like screening questions make it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience so you can prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. 2022 is coming to a close. You want to finish out this fiscal year strong. Small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. And LinkedIn Jobs helps you find qualified candidates that you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNBA. Post your job again for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNBA. Terms and conditions apply.
We noted before the season started, it would be really helpful for them to get off to a good start. They have not. I think that is fair to say. Lakers are 0-3 going into tonight's game. You got a playoff team in Denver. At least they catch a break here. The Denver's not playing well to start the year, but they're still a good team, and Denver's a really hard place to play. You go to Minnesota on Friday. The Timberwolves have really kind of eaten up the Lakers anyway of late.
Although they're not off to a great start either.
They are not either. They've got a lot of new stuff and new pieces to integrate as well. But again, it's a road game against a playoff caliber opponent. A really bad record through 10 games is staring them in the face, because even like San Antonio doesn't realize they're bad yet. Utah doesn't realize they're bad yet. The atmosphere in terms of the conversation around this team is about as worst case scenario as it can be. They're 0-3 and Westbrook's not playing well. And he is taking up an enormous amount of oxygen. And that's not entirely it's not necessarily that he's causing all of it with, you know, rants and raves and whatever it is. Some of his answers after games are certainly worthy of some discussion points.
He may not be causing all this directly. I would say Russ is not helping his own cause.
I would agree with that. I'm not saying he's
certainly
not
proactively.
My only point there was, it's not like Westbrook is just throwing bombs after games and whatever.
Only on the court.
Those are bricks. what they need are lasers. Apparently that's what that's called. How problematic is it, do you think, that he just is, to even beyond the issues with the rotation, he is taking up an enormous amount of energy in terms of what guys have to talk about, what they're talking about after games, what they're being asked about at practice? How wearing do you think that is 3 games in, and how much worse could it get? And how big a consideration would you say this needs to be?
Well, I mean, I think it's definitely a wearying thing for this team. I mean, you know, we've covered a lot of star teams over our time covering the Lakers. You know, we've covered Dodger teams and Ram teams with star players. And when star players are either not playing well or creating controversies of some sort, you know, players and coaches get asked about them all the time. And day in, day out, it can become exhausting. I mean, we saw this with LeBron, when he shut down that question from Dave McMenamin, you know, who he has a very good working relationship with. But that was the third straight question that LeBron got about Russ. And he said, and I think rightly, not necessarily about Dave, but at large, I can see that you guys are working collectively on the big Russ stories. And I'm not going to give you guys the quotes for this, particularly the quotes that can come back and bite me in the ass. Like, I'm not looking to do that. A lot of this, though, I think...
By the way, there is a big Russ story on ESPN right now.
Yes, of course there is. There's a big Russ story everywhere. I mean, look, man...
Because Russ is a big story. We're not making this up.
How many effing podcasts have we done, like, in the last 2 to 3 weeks that Russell Westbrook appears in the title? Like,
I believe this is the third, fifth, all of them.
I'd like to think that you and I, you know, we've been doing this for a long time. I'd like to think that we don't have a reputation as clickbait hunters. Like, I don't think that's how we're seen, but this is what's going on. But to answer, though, the other part of your question, in terms of the entire effect on the team, I think a lot of it has to do with how Russ is handling this and, you know, Russ's resistance towards what's being asked of him, the way Russ conducts himself on the court, the things that he does. Like, for example, he did not shoot well in last Friday's or Thursday's loss to the Clippers. But Russ, I thought, did a lot of things well in that game, particularly defensively. He was competing his ass off in that game, had a lot of good moments, you know, isolated against Kawhi Leonard. A game like that, those struggles you can learn to live with more. Russ's decisions, though, against Portland on Sunday were across the board awful. Like from almost start to finish in that game, he was making really, really bad decisions. And, you know, all culminating in the 2-for-1 from hell. And that's the type of stuff that will make the whole what's going on with Russell right. Westbrook, what do we do with Russell Westbrook thing more exhausting for his teammates. It's a lot of it comes down to what is he doing to right. help or hurt his own cause.
What I think is going to be fascinating about certainly Wednesday's game and Friday, if you know he needs another look, hamstrings in Westbrook's 33 or 34.
I think he's 34.
So like, you know, those in all seriousness, if you want to be able to, you know, better to have Westbrook healthy than not, like then maybe it might be worth an extra game. If this is still bugging him from the preseason and he has been this bad offensively, this I said in the first segment, could be a reason why.
He's almost 34.
Okay. We'll round up. And so
lately it looks like you'd round up to 35.
Maybe. Yeah. Live look at Russell Westbrook. If they play on Wednesday, either way, the results are fascinating. If they play well and they win, aha, Russell Westbrook is the problem. If they lose in Denver and the shooting still sucks, and it could, and like, or they, you know, they lose a couple games and whatever it is where Westbrook doesn't play, the panic level only escalates because you don't have to go full Dick Nixon. You don't have Russell Westbrook kick around anymore. And so that's not a great solution here either. So I either way, like this referendum, this is going to be a referendum on Russell Westbrook, whether it deserves to be or not. This, you know, tonight's game might be the one where the Lakers finally shoot better than 20% from 3-point range and win. And, you know, yes, Russ is shooting 8.3%, I believe, so far in the season. But he's not shooting at a particularly high volume. And so he's
and
not.
And nobody on this team can make threes to save their lives.
Right. That's my point. He's not the reason. And it's not like they're not getting wide open shots. They are. Westbrook, it should be noted, more than anyone, nobody in the league statistically has taken more wide open jump shots, wide open threes than Westbrook. There's a reason for that, by the way.
Defenders leave the court when he's about to shoot.
Non-smokers light up cigarettes. They pull up lawn chairs. But it's not like Westbrook's taking 9 a game and, you know, shooting 8%. He's taking like 3. So, but all I'm saying is statistically, this just might be the game where they finally shoot 33%. And if they'd shot 33% in the 3 games they've played so far, they'd at least be 2-1.
Easily.
So all of this is to say that it almost doesn't matter what happens on the floor, how much any of it has to do with Westbrook or not. The result, if they win on Wednesday, will be because they don't have Russell Westbrook.
Let me ask you this, though, before we go, because we're obviously going to have to talk about what becomes
what they do, what the team, line. Who they're going to play. Right.
Right. And, you know, different starting lineup, and we want to get into Troy Brown because he becomes a part of this anyway. This is a totally speculative question I'm asking to you, so all caveats noted. Do you get a sense that this is the beginning of the phasing of the stay home, Russ?
No. I don't either. I don't, and I'll tell you why. Because I don't think you can send him home if he's not. You can't send him home for not being good. You can send him home for disruptive behavior, for refusing to come off the bench, for whatever. Playing poorly shouldn't get you removed from the team.
Yes.
I mean, you can get traded, you can get bought out, whatever, but you don't get sent home for that. It could be the beginning of the end of him playing a lot, but which could lead to the beginning, but I don't think he's going to do it. I think if you sat him down, he would quote unquote behave. I don't like using that term with athletes, but you know, you understand what I'm getting,
especially
at.
Adult athletes.
Right. Like, you know, and I don't think he would be disrupted. I think then they would just start quietly working on a buyout, figuring that out.
The Lakers already look like they scapegoated Frank Vogel for the roster that they saddled Vogel with, to then turn around and look like they are that they are scapegoating Russell Westbrook for being the player that they traded for. It's a bad look, but for a team that centers its entire existence around star bleepery and getting superstars and collecting superstars and being a superstar destination, I can promise you those players will be watching and will notice if it seems like Russell Westbrook, who, say what you want about how he's playing now, he is somebody that is respected around the league and he has a career that is respected.
Uh-huh.
I'm not saying that the Lakers will never land another star if it seems like they're scapegoating Russ.
That's a bad look, though.
You've already seen like Kevin Durant and Paul George and other players very actively taking up for Russ. So, you know, to quote Walter White, tread lightly.
Yeah, I don't think that's the way it's going to go. But the Lakers do have to figure out who's going to play. And for the first time this season, in the short season again, which begins on Wednesday, they're going to have a different combo of players out there because one of them just unlikely to play. So who starts? Do that next.
Brian, betonline.net, they are your number one source for all your pro and college betting needs and sports info this season. You can find all the latest football league developments, game matchups, news, and podcasts right there on betonline.net. BetOnline is also your continued source for all of your sporting wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. The fastest, easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including MLB, MMA, boxing, and golf, but of course also the NBA and the Lakers. Last I checked, 28-1 to win the championship. Before the season opened, they were at 20-1, and I can understand why they're dropping. But if you still believe, if you think people and the folks over at BetOnline, they're overreacting to a rough start, now could be the time. I'm just saying, consider getting in a wager, you know, because the number will only get worse. The odds will only get worse if they start playing the way you believe that they can. So head to the website today, use your mobile device, learn more about the trends in action, BetOnline, where the game starts.
Andy, you've been wanting to talk about Troy Brown since he made his season debut. Excuse me. The Lakers have a new lineup that they need to deploy tonight to start the game. Anyway, you can combine those two topics into who ought to fill the starting lineup with Russell Westbrook presumably on the shelf.
Well, when I thought that actually the Denver game was a real opportunity to seg into Russell Westbrook coming off the bench, you know, because the things I talked about before in the environment, the guy that I was going to suggest putting into that fifth starting spot was Troy Brown. And, you know, I in terms of just the length and the defensive activity, and he is on his career a league average, if low volume, 3-point shooter. But I think he's somebody that, you know, kind of like Juan Toscano-Anderson, kind of like Austin Reeves, is a connective player and I think could fit very well alongside LeBron and AD. And there was a lot that I liked in what we saw in that debut against Portland. You know, the numbers.
Break it down, because I thought he was fine. We spoke very briefly about this earlier in the week. I thought he was fine. I didn't see a lot of great stuff. I didn't see a lot of bad stuff. I mean, he hadn't played, so my expectations were low. But what stuck out to you? Because you definitely saw more than I did.
There were a few possessions where I thought he did a really good job challenging Jerami Grant at the rim, forcing some misses. And, you know, Grant is really good in that area. I mean, we saw the final drive of the game for Portland.
Yeah,
I mean, he beat LeBron off the dribble. And, you know, granted, Anthony Davis was trying to challenge this without fouling out. But, you know, Grant is off to a good start this season. He can be a long, tough cover, especially going to the basket. And I thought Brown did a really good job with that.
It's a great name for an album. Long tough cover.
I mean, particularly if it's a cover album.
That is a great name for an album. Long
yeah,
tough
it really
cover.
Is.
I can spend the rest of the episode thinking which band it would be a great album for, but carry on. If you could talk for the next 8 minutes, that would be great.
Filibuster.
just vamp.
There was a moment I noticed where a Portland shot went up and Troy Brown immediately looked to box out. And it stood out to me just because we talked about how this team needs to find ways of offsetting its lack of size. And, you know, rebounding has been an issue over these few games. A couple times it's been really pronounced. And I've said before, acknowledged, I don't know the exacts of this because I have not seen enough of Troy Brown on a game in, game out basis. But the rebounding metrics for his position, like the team effect per cleaning the glass, have been consistently good throughout his career. So like that moment stood out to me as like maybe somebody who just does a good job in terms of activity that helps your team rebound well together. He had four boards in 22 minutes, which is neither amazing nor terrible, but it was something that I'd be watching for. The ball does not stick with him. He had a great give and go sequence with LeBron and him. Like he was in the corner, LeBron passed him the ball, started cutting. Troy Brown immediately fed him. It ended up an easy basket for LeBron. He cut really well on another sequence from the baseline corner. And this was when LeBron and AD were running pick and roll. AD set him up for a layup. And I thought that just good things happened while he was out there. And, you know, in a game where he was 2 of 7 from the field and had, I think, 4 points, didn't necessarily do much offensively. The Lakers' field goal, effective field goal percentage, was almost 48% with him on the field, with him on the court, as opposed to a little under 45%. And
you're pulling out the analytics.
And Portland's effective field goal percentage also went up dramatically with him sitting as opposed to him playing, 53% versus 45. And, you know, after that game, Darvin talked about like the need to execute well, but also like cut, screen, drive with a purpose. And these were all things that it felt like Troy Brown was doing in this game. So these are the reasons.
That's fair. And you know, that's a good deep dive into what he was doing in that game.
Yeah, I don't want to make too much out of it, but I'm just saying.
Right, I don't want to say this, but I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I think your choices here are really, you know, assuming Patrick Beverley still starts, assuming, you know, that
Lonnie Walker still starts.
Yeah, Lonnie Walker continues to start. I think you're really choosing here between Austin Reeves and Troy Brown. I don't have a problem with
Toscano Anderson.
I guess you could go JTA. I don't have a problem with either one. I think Brown would be, again, it's not something I think is so materially important that it's worth like, you know, really breaking down Darvin's intelligence or something like that with the choice he makes. I think Reeves plays at his best when he plays next to LeBron and AD. His sort of basketball IQ works best with those players. A guy like Patrick Beverley is a good fit with something like that. You know, just you're putting a lot of high IQ players, a lot of good ball movers together on the same floor. Brown defensively, you know, has a lot of potential. That's sort of the natural job that he was brought to LA to do, is sort of fill that gap. And can either one of them score a little bit? Like, because I think that the Lakers have been a train wreck offensively, and they need to find ways to put up points with players that aren't LeBron and AD. And if Troy Brown can give you 8 or 9, and then, you know, Austin Reeves comes off the bench and he gives you 8 or 9, and they essentially split the minutes at small forward, that's a win for the Lakers. And so I'd like to see it, if for no other reason than it's kind of why the Lakers theoretically signed him, is to be a bit of a 3-and-D guy who can fit very easily in, not a low usage potential, hit a couple threes. What they've tried to this point hasn't worked. It's not like Troy Brown's going to make it worse. So sure, why not?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned JTA. I agree with you. It's likely going to be either Reeves or Troy Brown.
I think JTA makes much more sense coming off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, he is a prototype, you know, and I know certain
bench
players.
Bench big, yeah.
Well, bench big, but I was also going to say energy big. And yeah. And a lot of players hate that. Like, you know, we covered Roni Turioff, and he despised that term. But we don't mean it in a, like, pejorative, limited player who just goes in there, runs around like his hair's on fire or something. Like, good energy players provide utility, and I think JTA does.
Performing against the second units of other teams is also helpful and important for a lot of these role guys, who you play them against.
Which also, by the way, is I think another reason why moving Russ to the bench would be a good move, because if you're looking to see him get his confidence back, assuming he still has enough in his bag to regenerate that confidence in the first place, you know, like him not being able to get past Drew Eubanks in Portland is a byproduct of the hamstring as opposed to the athleticism just going away.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. I'm just saying if that's right. Really the case.
If you believe that, yes.
I think he is more likely to rediscover that groove, and I think also just more utility. There's more use for him playing off the bench than there is in the starting unit anymore.
So we'll see what they do. We'll see. Let's again, the assumption is coming out of practice on Tuesday that Westbrook will not be available tonight. He's listed as doubtful. That is usually not something you come back from in the fourth game of the season. It would not shock me if he's doubtful on Wednesday and the Lakers have a decent game. If he turns out to be doubtful again on Friday in Minnesota. If you're keeping track, the folks at Bet Online, actually, they send us stuff every day. This came out actually before he got hurt. Will Westbrook be traded by Thanksgiving? Yes, plus 110. No, minus 140. So 11 to 10 says he'll be traded by Thanksgiving. That, for a lot of fans, would be something to be thankful for.
That's so mean.
It really is. It is mean. But Lakers fan, look, I am way more empathetic, I think, than Lakers fans are at this point, because you know they've had it. They're annoyed at Westbrook attitude wise. They're annoyed at his play. They're annoyed at what he represents. They're annoyed at the situation the Lakers are in. Mark Stein had a great thing on his Substack, which we'll talk about at some point coming up. Just whether or not it was all worth it, like, you know, the Anthony Davis trade, all these other things. The Lakers win one title and could be in the wilderness for the next few years. Russell Westbrook plays a large role in that conversation and deciding whether or not the trade was worth it. He is going to be a pivot point in this franchise when you tell the history of it, when they make the next set of documentaries in 40 years. He's going to be the pivot point for the next 10 years. Yeah. And it's not a good one. So we'll see what happens on Wednesday night. We'll obviously be back with all the post-game analysis. And, Godspeed, Lakers.